Welcome to Legends Among Us, a podcast devoted to the veterans and troopers of 3rd Cavalry Regiment. I'm your host, Chaplain Jason Phipps, and it is great to have you joining us today. With us is Sergeant First Class Greg Hill. He is our Military Equal Opportunity Advisor, and it's great to have you on today, Sergeant Hill. Thanks for joining us. I know there's a story that... probably multiple stories that you have to tell about not only coming to this organization, but coming back to this organization in many ways. So would love to just have you share some of those stories. Give us a little bit of your backstory. How did you come into the Army? And then how did you end up at 3CR?
Yes, sir. So I come from a long lineage of military family members, and it was pretty much put in my head at a young age that this is something that I wanted to do. It became a dream of mine. Originally wanted to be like Special Forces or some sort of SOCOM unit, but you know, 9/11 happened and the war kicked off. And when I graduated high school in 2006, I thought that the pipeline for that would have been so long that the war would have been over. So I ended up renegotiating my contract at MEPS and selecting tanks, and I became a 19 kilo when I went to basic training like a month after I graduated high school. And at that time, 3rd ACR, or it was an Armored Cav Regiment at the time, was returning from their deployment in OAF-3. And moving from Carson to Fort Hood at the time. So when I graduated, there was a big influx of tankers from my class that we all got assigned to 3rd ACR. And late in 2006, I came over to Sabre Squadron, over to Heavy Company, back when it was a tank company and not an FST. And that's where I started my career. So fast forward all the way to a couple years ago, towards the end of my career, I was reaching out to my Armor Branch talent manager about possible assignments to an ROTC gig near my son. He reached back to me with a counteroffer of being the EO advisor in the 3rd Cavalry Regiment. And I remember as a young private and specialist in this regiment, I loved my time. There was ups and downs and there was some toxic moments and some miserable moments. But at the end of the day, throughout my career, every time I ran into somebody with a 3CR patch, we seemed to mesh together much better than anybody else with any other combat patch. You could see 1st Cav, you could see 3rd ID. None of them bonded well, but when you see the 3CR Brave Rifles combat patch anywhere, even if you never served together in the same deployment, different eras, whatever, everyone just seemed to become like brothers and sisters at that point. It was a bond that you couldn't break.
Wow. Okay. So, well, explain to the listeners, like how long have you been in 3CR total, just years wise?
I'm coming up on the end of my fifth year total in this regiment.
Okay, so you've spent some time in some other units, obviously. What other units have you been in, and how have those experiences compared to what you've experienced in 3CR?
Starting off with non-combat or non-operational units, I did recruiting, and I was an instructor for tankers at basic training at Fort Knox. Aside from that, I was also assigned to 2nd ID in Korea for a year. I was assigned to 1st ID at Fort Riley for a few years, and 2CR also in Germany. As well as 1st Armored at Fort Bliss is where I came from before here. Those units, while they had their ups and downs and they had some good things and some bad things, none of them forged like this brotherhood or this sisterhood and this bond of, I wouldn't even relate it to the trauma bonding. There was a lot of bonding over good times as well. And there's just something about bringing us together through the tradition and the celebrations and the ceremonies and everything that we do in 3CR. Everyone, even the most depressed, downtrodden individual in this organization still has more pride than any other unit across the Army.
That's fascinating to me, because obviously there are a lot of units in the Army that have a very rich lineage. But one of the things that I noticed really shortly after I got here was just how long the lineage, how long the continuous service that 3CR has maintained over the years has affected the culture here, has really in many ways shaped the culture here, that it's very easy, I should say, to take for granted or overlook the fact that we share a common bond with mounted riflemen from the middle of the 19th century, which for someone who was born in the 21st century, that's a pretty big leap there. Someone who is like a millennial or a Gen Zer to think that they could identify with somebody who conducted combat operations before the Civil War. There's a disconnect there, but the culture itself, the camaraderie, the fact that we have as many streamers as we do, the number of campaigns that we have been a part of over the course of 100 and almost 180 years now tends to transcend any divisions that may have existed or may exist even now with younger troopers. So what would you say, if you could pinpoint what it is about 3CR that has given you such a rich appreciation for this organization? Obviously, other than the fact that people were able to bond and find some common ground because of the bug patch, there are a lot of people that find common ground over other patches as well. So is there something beyond that, or is it just your personal experience? Or
so a lot of it equates to my personal experience. And
okay,
when I was first assigned to the unit, I felt like many soldiers feel now, especially if this is their first unit. During that time where you just feel like everything is normal, you don't understand what's going on, my appreciation for this unit didn't start until about a year or two after I left the unit, especially after not my first PCS leaving this unit, but the second one after that, and getting to see at least two more units beyond this one. That's when it started to hit home. And then as my career progressed and I started running into more 3CR patches, it really started to hit home. So by the time I hit about 12 to 15 years in, my love for this unit had grown so immensely compared to what it was when I was first here that you wouldn't even recognize me. And you can call me a nerd, you can call me a geek, you can say I drink the Kool-Aid, but yeah. At the end of the day, it was a lot of my leadership.
Right.
I really, I don't want to say blame because it's not a negative. It was their impression on me of how wonderful this unit was that lasted. And I didn't realize how good it was and what they were saying until after I left it.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you saying as well is that there was something unique about the leadership within 3CR as well that shaped who you have, in a sense, become today in many ways.
Yes, sir.
So before we get into that, because I want to run with that and talk about how your leadership and the leadership of other individuals, your peers, can shape the future of this organization, talk a little bit about your time overseas with 3CR. So since I've been here, which has been a very short amount of time, we've done a rotation out to Korea, obviously non-combat rotation, but you have done some actual combat deployment time with 3CR. What was that like? Because again, I've never been in a combat environment while attached to like a mechanized or an armored unit, but how did that kind of shape your impression of this organization as well?
It was a little bit hectic at first and chaotic. I would say as a young private, and it's kind of funny to look at it now, being a senior leader as a sergeant first class in this regiment versus the first time I was here, I was a private. The views of this unit are completely different. I get to see things from behind the scenes that I didn't get to see when I was first here.
Yeah.
But getting over there back in 2006 to 2009, this unit was in the height of GWAT and then in the height of the surge. And so less than 12 months after in processing to Sabre Squadron, I was on a plane to Kuwait getting prepared for OIF 0709. At the time, Heavy Company was OpCon reassigned under 3rd Squadron to assist with operations in Mosul, and the rest of Sabre Squadron went down south to Diyala or Nineveh, one of those two. And Heavy Company, or Heavy Troop at the time, was OpCon under 3rd Squadron, and we were operating armored vehicles in an urban area. And it was we tried to prepare for it, but we were not as prepared as we thought we were, but we still managed to do it. And it's very difficult because a tank is a long-range weapon. The shortest distance that it can shoot at anything is 50 meters, and that's only with the machine gun. You have to shoot minimum 200 meters or greater with the main cannon, and everything in a city is under 200 meters. Yet somehow, some way, there were anti-tank defeating weapons, and we were cleared hot to use main gun on some of these targets, and it was still justified. Everything was good to go, but it was unique. And the crazy thing about back then, the other thing that stuck with me after I left the unit was the amount of pride. This unit was so proud of itself that we weren't even allowed to go to the chow hall in a dirty uniform following a mission.
Wow.
We had to go back and get changed just to get in the chow hall.
Yes.
We had to, every time we came back in from the wire on a daily basis, clean the tank inside and out, clean the Humvees inside and out, clean our weapons inside and out. And it was so much at the time, it was frustrating and it felt redundant. But when I started showing up to other units with less pride and discipline, it really, really resonated with me.
That is fascinating. Now, when we talk about pride and discipline, and we could go off on many rabbit trails with regards to that, just what we observe on a daily basis, both within 3CR, but even in the greater Army enterprise, how has that contributed to maintaining the integrity or the reputation of 3CR in the sense of, are there still elements of that pride and discipline that exist within this organization as you see it now? As you mentioned, you're seeing behind the curtain a lot more, so you can see where senior leaders are upholding standards and discipline and where they're not. Do you think we uphold them in the same regard as we did when, or as 3CR did when you were a private, or is it just different now? How would you describe that?
It's a little bit of both, but I from what I've seen, there's still a lot of pride and discipline. It's just being conveyed differently.
Okay.
Back in the height of the war, we had a bunch of old Vietnam and old Gulf War senior leaders who acted a certain way. There was a lot of certain things about our Army culture that were a little bit acceptable back then, even though they may have not been within regulation.
Right.
Versus today, today's climate, especially today with the new generation and the way society works, it is slightly different on how we approach things.
Okay.
But my impression is that we still hold ourselves, or we at least try to hold ourselves, to that same level of discipline and pride. There are a few bad apples out there who try to just complain about everything.
Right.
That's okay. It's a human thing. Everyone wants to make complaining a sport, but yeah. At the end of the day, I still, my personal opinion, having seen it back then and now, still it upholds its tradition and its pride.
That's good. A lot of people, again, I don't want to say this is the prevailing opinion, but they would say that, let's just go with, in terms of recent time period, 2010, really at the height of maintaining that level of discipline and esprit de corps and respect for the organization. But as the years progressed until we got, particularly when we got to about 2020, there's this steady decline and just perhaps pride and discipline, but also maintaining a solid moral compass within our leaders and maintaining good accountability to ensure that troopers are making good decisions. Obviously, troopers are going to make bad decisions regardless of how esteemed your leadership is, but a lot of people would say that there was a decline over the years and that perhaps now we are starting to see a return to a greater degree of respect for this organization. Would you say that based upon your experience that has been the case over the last 15 years or something else has occurred?
While I have no data to back it up, my personal opinion is that I do kind of agree with that perception of how the Army has gone. And it's not necessarily one particular thing, whether it's tradition or respect or anything like that. I think it's a combination of things. But what started to happen, in my personal opinion, is that a lot of these rugged leaders who had been through a lot over the course of the past few decades started phasing out. There was a lot of younger people coming in and a lot of things that were more aware societally and legally, inside and outside of the Army, that started to play a factor. So a lot of administrative things started taking place, and there were certain leaders being fired over minuscule things. So that kind of started a snowball effect of how Army leaders were reacting to certain situations. Unfortunately, that compounded enough to where it did deteriorate a lot of discipline and a lot of traditions in many units across the Army. But that's not because anybody was lazy or incompetent or ignorant. It's a matter of them just being risk averse and being scared to get fired for something small.
Hmm.
And so I think that's my personal opinion on how it started to go away. But there's been a few senior leaders throughout my career that in various units that have tried to maintain some sort of level of discipline and tradition with every unit that I've been in. And I appreciate them for that because we cannot let our traditions die.
Absolutely. Yeah, and as we've talked about already, I mean, 3CR has just an assortment of rich traditions that, you know, I think, at least for me, probably for you to some degree, but you've seen it before, we're on display during Brave Rifles Week a few weeks ago. I'm sure that there are other senior leaders within this organization currently that have similar feelings towards 3rd Cavalry Regiment as you do. Have you connected with those individuals? Do you have camaraderie with them, or do those individuals even exist?
They do actually exist. Okay. I'm not sure if he's still here or not, but last year when we were in Korea, Master Sergeant Fruick, who worked on regimental staff, he was also here in the same time period I was. Matter of fact, he was in this regiment probably for 2 years longer than I have been.
Okay.
So he has seen the original 3rd ACR, and he's seen what it was like back then. He also, from what I understand, requested to come back here or was okay coming back here. And he loves the unit just as much as I do. There are some things that we talk about, how it's different now versus back then, but that's the world evolving. It's not bad.
Right.
The world's going to evolve, and either we adapt with it or we just get left behind.
Yeah.
So
what do you think, besides just kind of going off on a side note here, what do you think besides our history and our traditions, what do you think are some unique distinctives of 3CR that don't exist in other cavalry regiments or other equivalent units?
Just the fact that our original mission as a core asset, how we operate, granted we're at Strikers, back when it was an armored cav regiment, I used to brag to other soldiers about how our MTO setup was, that a single lieutenant colonel had multiple companies of tanks and Bradleys under his command, also had a battery of Paladin self-propelled artillery under his command, also had the forward support troop, and a number of other unique assets that no other lieutenant colonel in the rest of the army would have under one command.
Yeah.
As like a permanent command.
Sure.
Sure, they'll be opconned or they'll be tasked and attached and detached and all that. This was 3rd ACR, had all of that firepower under one lieutenant colonel's command, and the regimental commander, aside from those three combat squadrons, also had an aviation squadron with Apaches and Blackhawks. Fast forward to today, the mission set is still unique in the sense that we're required for rapid reconnaissance and rapid movements to seize objectives and seize key terrain. And we, even though we are a light armor force or a light mechanized force, we still play a pivotal part for this division and for this corps in mission success.
Yeah, agreed. That is something that is still uniquely true of this organization. So you've been around, you're back now, you've been here for about 18 months. How much more time do you have, do you think, here?
So my time will be up in September of next year, sir. Whether it was PCS or not, I actually have my retirement approved for September of next year. So I will start in the next 12 months, not only working on my retirement, but preparing my equal opportunity program at the regimental level to pass on to the next person, because there's a chance that there will be a gap between me and the next person. And on top of that, that's probably the window of the unit, the regiment deploying overseas again, which is only going to create more heartache.
Sure.
So that's what I'm going to be spending the next 12 months doing, still taking care of the regiment, taking care of the soldiers and advising commanders, but also preparing this to pass on to the next person without any hiccup, because I had to put a lot of effort into standing this thing back up because it was very disorganized when I received it.
And how did you get assigned as the EO rep for 3CR?
So the funny thing is, in this regiment right now, it's an infantry regiment, especially with Long Knife being temporarily deactivated. I'm the only 19 kilo in the regiment. If you look at the USR, it says we are MTOD 1 19 kilo armor crewman, and it's the EO advisor. And funny story, like I said earlier, was that it was offered to me. Normally, the EO advisor position is nominated by the branch talent manager, and they'll either look for somebody or they'll send out emails to find out if anyone's interested. So the talent manager emailed me and asked if I was interested in it. It was between 3CR and 1st Brigade over in 1st Cav. And as soon as I read 3rd Cavalry, I was like, give me that one.
Yeah.
I want to go back to where I started my career.
Sure. Okay, so one of the things that I observe, and I'm sure you observe this having spent more than a day in the Army, is that we continue to get older, but the soldiers like to stay the same age. So that presents a host of unique opportunities to coach, teach, and mentor, if you will. So you know your timeline, you know that there is going to come an end to your time. How will you best utilize that time to train up troopers to be the leaders of this organization, not just as the EO rep, but just as a veteran of this organization?
So over the past 18 months or so, I've already had some sidebar conversations with many soldiers within the regiment. Another thing that I like to do is I tend to hang out with the senior career counselor for the regiment a lot, Sergeant First Class Contreras. And as they get customers in to talk about reenlistment contracts, I sit down and listen to them and give them a bit of advice. And probably 90% of what I talk to them about has nothing to do with the EO program. A lot of it has to do with mentoring them on their career as much as my knowledge, you know, based on their career is the way the Army works, how PCS works, how the Army used to be when I was young versus how it is now. And even some soldiers I've talked about personal issues, whether it be family medical things or financial advice and things of that nature. But I also get a chance to tell them, hey, go talk to ACS, go talk to these financial advisors, go talk to these counselors, many of which they didn't even know about.
Yeah.
And to no fault to their leadership, because even some of their leadership doesn't know about these agencies either. That's another thing that's kind of faded away, is the use of these Army agencies that provide assistance. And so I've already been doing that. And I'm also, every month I participate by teaching a point of instruction for the BR Tough Leadership Skills Seminar.
Okay.
And during that block of instruction, I teach them how to improve interpersonal communication skills, whether it be personal, professional, things of that nature. And I give them some little lessons here and there that they can take home with them.
Okay.
So that's the base of where I'm trying to make my impact. But as I will always be available whether I'm in the Army or not, because soldiers are the reason why I managed to make it to 20 years.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for them, I would have left the Army long, long time ago.
Sure. And ideally, that's why we're in the Army in the first place, is we're here to help troopers, help soldiers be effective warfighters. I mean, obviously, from my perspective, if I'm going to see them effectively deliver lethality on the battlefield, then I have to help them with their personal stuff, their spirituality, their issues with their families and all of those things. But we're not the only ones who facilitate that. Obviously, you do as well. And there are other individuals like EBH within this organization that help improve the quality of life of troopers so that they can go out and do what their country needs them to do. Have you ever felt like, or have you ever been in a situation where you've had to clearly dispel the myths that exist within 3rd Cavalry Regiment in order to infuse more of that IEA mindset so that they can go out and train and fight and win our nation's wars?
I can't remember the details specifically, but yes, there have been many of times. More recently, last year in Korea, we would deploy forward and I would run focus groups and interviews of soldiers of various levels and ranks for some of the commanders and give them the feedback. And one of the common themes in Korea was, why did we have to deploy here when we can do this stuff at home? But what I have to remind them is, if you want to be the best of the best, you want to be tier one, you want to be Rangers, Special Forces, things of that nature, they run the same drill day in and day out.
Yes.
They don't do anything different. They run the same mission 10 times a day, and then they come back for the next 5 days and do the same thing.
Yeah.
Until they are so tired of it.
Yes.
That they can do it in their sleep. And you just have to understand, like, I get it. It becomes redundant. It is boring. But at some point, you have to understand, in order for us to be an expert, that's what my NCOs did to me before we deployed. I spent 11 months of just getting drilled into the ground that I am so grateful for, because the first time I took contact, it was like second nature for me. Yeah. My body reacted and I couldn't think. My mind went blank, but my body reacted exactly to how my NCOs had trained me.
Yes.
And I'm grateful for that. Had they been lazy or incompetent or ignorant, then I probably would have died.
Yeah.
But because they drilled it into me until I was so mad at them, it became second nature, and that's what saved my life, really. I can't think of any other crazy scenarios that I had to dispel, but what I do remind folks is that they'll come into the unit saying, oh, look at that, there's another wave of crime, or there's this and that, this misconduct, that misconduct, so on and so forth. And I just remind them, every other brigade has the same amount of misconduct we do.
Yeah.
Every brigade has the same amount of soldier casualty losses, self-inflicted losses that we do. They just don't advertise it like us because Nobody is as proud of their unit as we are. Nobody likes their unit as much as we do. Nobody talks about their unit as much as we do. We talk about ourselves so much that everyone hates us. And I have never seen a regiment or brigade in my 19 years of service bully their way into getting what they want like 3rd CR does. I have heard certain things being said where we'll say we want to do this, or we want to do this task, or we want to do this option, or something that we like to do. And from what I understand, other echelons have tried to shut us down, and we're the only regiment that will go do it anyways, and nobody will stop us because we're just that good.
Interesting.
We get it done. We look good doing it. And we talk about ourselves so much that everyone hates us. And that's, I love it because we can back it up too.
Yeah, I do too. I like that mentality. And the reality is like, we're not going to combat tomorrow. So where do you look for those opportunities to really kind of bolster the reputation of this organization when we're not, you know, taking contact with the enemy? Like, you have to do it during rotations in Korea, which I still think the fact that we were that close in proximity to North Korea, I mean, that in and of itself is pretty cool from a strategic perspective. But again, the 18-year-old who's just turning a wrench on a striker doesn't necessarily get that. So that may require some additional motivation, perhaps. I don't know if we do that well or if it's really even our responsibility to do that. But I think that's where it comes back to the reputation of this and the history and the lineage of this organization. Like at the end of the day, that's feeding your soul to some degree.
Well, in my personal opinion, I think a lot of that has to do with the leadership in the middle, middle management. That falls on them a little bit because it is on them to communicate hire's intent and hire's vision down to the lowest level.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that they don't, but sometimes they might try and they might give the wrong vision or the wrong perception. And that's okay also.
Yeah.
But I can't always wait on regiment to motivate me. At some point as an individual, even at the lowest level, I have to find some sort of self-motivation and discipline.
Yes.
You know,
100% agree.
And I have to, even if it's nerdy or geeky, maybe buy in just a little bit. And then that little bit of buy-in will lead to more buy-in. But at the end of the day, I have to know what I'm doing is real and it's going to benefit something at a higher or a bigger picture. But no private, every sergeant major that I've ever worked for in 19 years has told me that they knew 9/11 was coming and they trained and they were drilled into the ground. And then 9/11 happened. And guess what? Pack your bags, we're going.
Yeah.
We don't know if another 9/11 is going to happen, but we have to be ready.
100% agree. We do this H2F extender course monthly, the regimental PT does, and I talk about this concept of intrinsic motivation and how we have to find that, like you said, within ourselves, that ability within ourselves to take the initiative, to be motivated, to be content in many ways, because a lot of times people, we still have this mindset that we're looking for immediate happiness or immediate gratification. And you're not going to get that hanging out in a motor pool for hours and hours until you're finally released. So you have to find some sort of intrinsic motivation in order to even come close to grasping the concept of the greater mission of the United States Army, specifically the mission of 3CR. And if you're unable to do that, then your life is going to be miserable. So we do have it's a daunting task, but I think it's a noble task to convince young privates and specialists and even some young NCOs, you need to dig deep and find that motivation every day to some degree in order to contribute to the well-being of and the mission of 3rd Cavalry Regiment. And it's great to have like veterans come in, like when we had Colonel Teeples come in and he talked for a while. But he was motivating to listen to. And I know that he's got stories that could go on for days. And one thing that I had wished is that someone like that could have hung out in front of the whole formation and just like, hey, I was the 70th RCO. This is my story. And just like motivated all the Joes out there.
Absolutely.
So.
And it was funny, a couple of weeks ago during the reunion, I didn't actually come up and talk to him, but it was the first time I'd ever seen him in person. And 19 years ago, I heard nothing but stories about him and Command Sergeant Major Caldwell, Big John Caldwell, and a lot of many other senior leaders in OAF3. I heard nothing but stories. And 19 years later, I finally get to see the legend in person.
Behind the stories.
And hear his side of the story and what he saw and things of that nature. So right there, that was like what you were talking about earlier, the link to the past.
Yeah.
He's a living link to the past.
Yep.
All of those regimental commanders who, between colonel and lieutenant generals, all links to the past, and they're still alive.
Yeah.
Not to mention some of the things that we have in regimental headquarters that, like the jacket of Colonel Polk sitting in a glass case.
Yep.
80-something years ago, that jacket was worn on a battlefield in Europe.
Yeah.
And it's sitting in our building right now being preserved.
Yeah. If you have not been to regimental headquarters and you're around, you need to come check it out. It's a shrine to 3CR, and the regimental staff go in there every day. And every time we do like newcomers PT, it's the one opportunity that we take a month to like revisit everything that has gone on in this organization. And it is pretty incredible. Well, Sergeant Hill, it's been great to have you on. Any closing thoughts, any other things you would want to share with our listening audience before we call it a day?
Yeah, I just want to let everyone know that change and improvement doesn't happen overnight. Everything takes effort. Everything takes work. And the universe is a balance. Everything is a balance. You believe in God. If you believe in the universe, everything is a balance. You can't have good without bad. You can't have light without dark. You're going to have days where you sit in the motor pool and you're miserable.
Yes.
I don't know what to tell you, but
deal with it.
You have to. Everyone wants to go to war, but nobody wants to train for it.
Yes.
So remind yourself, remind your soldiers, remind your leaders. Every time, if you only get to go to the field twice a year, or if you go to the field 10 times a year, every time you go to the field, treat it like you're really at war.
Yeah.
Because then that way, when you go to war, you don't have to think. All you do is react.
Yeah. You just execute.
And you will come home alive. My legacy is not how many ribbons and stripes I have on my chest. My legacy is getting to watch my soldiers get promoted to senior NCO, watching my old officers get promoted to field grades and general grade officers.
Yeah.
And watching that the next war that we go, I don't have to look down the list of KIA and see anybody that I know.
Mm.
That is the legacy I want to leave.
Yeah. Amen. That's good stuff. Well, again, Sergeant Hill, really appreciate you coming out and coming onto the show, and look forward to linking up for the next special staff deep dive with the boss.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me on, sir.
Yeah,
appreciate
absolutely. That. Hey, great, great to have you tuning in with us this week. So have a great week, and we will link up with you again.
Yes, sir. Aye-ya. Aye-ya.